You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So, yes, I have this beautiful thing that's unusual. I don't think anyone's done this before. I'm claiming it, that an actor has come in, a performer actor has come in and done a surreal comedy tour in May, and then June, July, come back and done the tragedy of Hamlet and dramatic
Yes.
tragedy of that. And that is unusual. So I'm saying to people, buy two tickets for the price of two. What a great bargain that is.
Yeah.
And you can see as just as Shakespeare went from his comedies to his dramas and tragedies, so am I in real time in front of you. So people can see the transition of my career. As a trans person, transition, the movement in my career. Let's use that word. Otherwise,
yes.
Too many transitions.
Well, that's actually, it's something that I wanted to ask you about, because there is such a journey that we're seeing you take kind of live in front of us. There is this narrative of your life in this, because it's the first 35 years in one show, correct?
Now 37. So I started in
87 88. Years.
88, 36, almost 38 years. Yeah. So I started in about March of 88 was when I started stand-up. So,
right.
Yes, I'm doing my mathematics here. Because as I keep touring, the remix, I can, the remix tour could be a tour forever, but it's also just like bands are doing. Bands are saying, and here's an old one, and here's a new one, and here's an old. So that's what I can do.
I think it's really cool. And it's not something that, like, because when I've been talking to people about it, I've been saying, like, it's a greatest hits tour. It's like it's all of your favorite bits. But, like, is it at any point sort of refreshed, or, like,
yes.
Have you gone back to old material and, like,
yes.
used it up at all?
Exactly. That's why it's called the remix, because it is remix.
Yeah.
Madonna famously did Like a Virgin as a German torch song. That's not how it was recorded. It's that. That's what I have done. And Death Star Canteen is in there, but Daphne du Maurier is also in that scene, who she wasn't in the first one. So that's what's going on. I like the fact, because I need to keep it alive for myself, and that's how we're doing it.
So do you find that there is a difference in yourself and in this, like, performer persona that you have when you're doing the comedy show versus when you're doing the Hamlet show? I mean, because Hamlet is one of, like, literary canon's most impressive, like, stories, and
yeah.
You're doing it completely by yourself. So
yeah.
There's so much just in that, where we're looking at your history and your journey and your transition through your professional career, but also your personal career. And then you're also doing, like, so many characters in Hamlet. You're jumping between the full cast. So,
well, let's
where,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, I would say on the, because there's 23 characters which people grab hold of and go with, but that is, some of them are just one-liners. So it's really 9 characters, which is still a chunk of characters.
Still a good chunk of characters.
4, and then we've got Polonius in there. That's 5. 6, 7,
Rosencrantz
eight,
and
Guildenstern. Guildenstern, 7. Is it 7 or 9? There's a couple of others in there. Yeah, I think it's 9 characters. I worked it out, and I kind of keep forgetting. What did I count? I counted them. So Plutus in there. That's the family of 3. And he's, say, 2 with his mother. That's 5. Then there's Claudius. That's 6. And then where do we get the other thing? Rosencrantz, that's 8. And there's one other, I think, in there, which I can't work out where I'm doing it. Oh, well, yeah, the Gravedigger is going to be, he's a
Oh,
character.
Of course.
Anyway, the main Gravedigger, I should say, with the Will Kemp. Of the Gravediggers, because I've really started. If you know, the Will Kemp did all the comedy roles, and Richard Burbage did all the main heavy duty. So I've started my career as Kemp, and I'm driven over to Burbage. So this is from Kemp to Burbage. That's kind of what I'm doing. So the interesting thing on stage, yes, it is. So what's the essence of your question there? Is there a difference between the two, or what are the contrasting differences?
Yeah, what are the contrasting differences? Because especially when you're saying an audience come see both and get this, like, full range of
Well, I have a lot of experience on stage on my own. And a lot of people,
yes.
as you'll probably know, and people will know, that people are doing solo shows all around the world. And so that is great. Probably gives them more control. So they can say, actually, I'd like to take this show. We're going to India with this. So so we said, let's go to India. And I just said, I would like to go to India. They're really into their Shakespeare. And I phoned up Anubhav, who's a comedian and journalist from there. And I said, Anubhav, Shakespeare? Yeah, we could do it. I'll put out some feelers and let's see what we can put together. So that's a beautiful thing. Whereas normally it uses an A-plus list, and then you can do a film, whatever film you want. But the rest of it, everyone has to just fit in. But comedically, I can go wherever I want. And dramatically now, I can take Great Expectations, my previous show, and Hamlet wherever I want. So on stage, I'm very at home on stage, but it's I would say Hamlet is more difficult because I keep my stand-up, I keep quite conversational so that I can drive through an ad lib and go in this place and keep the fear away, because I do my stand-up in French and German and Spanish as well. So that really backs the fear off because you've got these extra languages you've done them in. So surely English has got to be easier than that. And then you come to the Hamlet, and it's dramatically landing each character in the place they are in their arc. That is the very tricky thing, I think, to do it. When Hamlet is attacking into Ophelia, he is quite belligerent. He feels that he's being watched, showing or making show of the fact that he is mad. Look, see the madness that I have in me. And not really caring that Ophelia is really struggling under this. And Ophelia is saying, I am young, but she's underwritten. Her and Gertrude are underwritten. So we wanted to make the as feisty as we could before she turns, and just her saying, this is what is this? What is this craziness that's going on with this person? And then to be inside her, be the Ophelia, the young girl that I would have been, young woman that I would have been if I'd grown up in a woman, being the young prince that would have been if I'd been a prince, that thing, being the Claudius, the brother who was left out and killed his brother for that thing. And my older brother did the adaptation, but we don't have the Claudius and Elder Hamlet relationship, which is a beautiful thing that we don't have that. So just to play all these characters in that place and do it and land it and make it work. Not everyone agrees I've made it work. Some critics said you I smell and should take my life or whatever they said. I didn't read them, but I think they're wrong because the audiences are coming more and more. They come. We keep extending. We're getting these superlatives coming. Just picked up an award from the Boston Theatre Critics. And one from the Shakespeare Theatre Company in Chicago. And we sold so well in the UK on the UK tour. And now we're here in coming to New Zealand and Auckland and Wellington, we will be performing. So I love doing it. And it's over 250 performances now. So I'd say to people, come and sit, because if you're another performer, you could have a look and see, wow, what is that? What do I think of this? Do you want to do something like this? Because solo shows is a good thing for other actors to have so that they can say, I want to do this performance and play these characters over here. It's very challenging, but it's great for them to know that these are now on the table. A lot of people are doing this. And so this is a future place where actors can be. So it's just great to be here. Unfortunately, I'm going into your winter, the winter on the Southern Hemisphere, but I don't,
It's still kind of autumny.
yes, it's autumn. I want the autumn to be the longest autumn you've ever had.
We'll do our absolute best.
That would be great. Because it's just going summery in London as I was leaving. But yeah, it's great. And we were all across America doing it from LA to we've got 7 rave reviews in LA and then 9 in Washington, DC. So it's just, I can't quite believe it would get to this place. And now we're circling around and considering Broadway, which I wasn't going to do.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. That wasn't on the cards, but it's going so well that you just think, well,
Might
let's
as
see
well
if
at
we
this
can
point.
find we have to find a gap in somebody's in the Broadway theatres. So anyway, we're looking at that.
I love that. I want to ask why Hamlet? You spoke about it briefly, sort of, oh, well, let's do Hamlet, why not Hamlet? But was there a reason that you gravitated towards that one as opposed to some of the other plays? I know that Hamlet has like such an iconic like role in
Well,
literature.
I was very intimidated by Elizabethan verse, but I have played Edward II in Marlowe's play before. But I wanted to line things. I wanted to go towards Elizabethan verse to other Shakespearean plays, push in. But I probably wasn't on people's list, so I pushed to do that and put out feelers and say, I really like to do this. And some people will say, oh yeah, well that's interesting. Let me have a check, and then didn't get back to me. So I just thought, okay, I have done my career in a very eclectic way. I don't know if eclectic is quite the right word, but it's an unusual way. And starting from a accounting and finance degree, very similar to what Mick Jagger was doing, and then he dropped out and I dropped out. I wasn't copying Mick, but I just, and then he went off and did his thing, and I've done my thing. So there's me linking myself with Mick Jagger there. But go from that into, and I wanted to act when I was 7. That was the thing, and then I just wasn't getting roles at school, dyslexic, couldn't really read this. That when they said, read out these parts, oh, you're not reading them very well. You're obviously a bad actor. Let's give you third jailer. So a lot of third jailer, second jailer, ninth jailer roles.
Oof.
And that was just a joke, but yeah, it would have been, it's the equivalent of that. And so when I discovered comedy as a thing, really the Pythons and and the fringe footlights and going to the fringe and that thing. So, oh, you can write, you have to write your own. Not even because you have to write your own stuff, and then you can give yourself your own roles, and then you don't have to go through this audition thing, which I don't seem to be very good at doing. And I'm not the right height to be a big lead role, so I'll give myself the comedy. Okay, we'll do that. Let's forget drama, do that. And it just took so long once I dropped out of uni at 19, pushing to do comedy. But when I was 30, my career started, I could feel it all happening. And I got a separate acting agent, refused to do a sketch show, refused to do sitcoms and on telly, and just didn't do that. I bypassed that entirely and pushed for this separate career now. And when I was getting, got nominated for Best Actor on Day and Death of Joe Egg on Broadway, and I was pushing, I was ready, I'm really ready. Is anyone interested? No, you're not that interested. Okay, I understand. I'm interested. So when Great Expectations came up, I did it as an audiobook because I'm dyslexic. I thought, let's push into that 20 hours of book. And I thought we could do a version. My brother did the adaptation on that. And so I thought, let's do Hamlet in this way. I started doing it. I could feel it was working. I said, let's, because I was doing it initially from a book and gradually, slowly learning the play as I did it. And I thought, let's do it from Hamlet. But I had to learn the whole play first. My brother did the adaptation. We worked it out with Selena Goddard, my director, so that which bits will we use, which we don't. There are three different versions. Shakespeare signed off on none of it. And so Hamlet was the top of the line thing. And maybe I was at a place where I couldn't really wait to go through, oh, let's start with Second Foot Soldier in something, and As You Like It. And do I need to do the comedy roles? I don't think I need to do that. I think I proved my comedy credentials. Let's just go in and do Hamlet. And I would say when I started rehearsing and playing Hamlet, I just felt very at home in the character of particularly of Hamlet. It's a bit, not I'm saying that I want to be a prince, but just that it can be a pressure. It can be a huge pressure, to be or not to be speech. This is Hamlet. Oh, bells are ringing. And there is a bit of a bells are ringing when you first do To Be or Not to Be, when I did it in New York. But I felt very at home. I felt all my journey. My mum was an actor and a singer on a semi-professional basis, more amateur semi-professional. And I just thought, this feels good. And mum would be really pleased. She died back in 1968, such a long time ago. But to have one of us kids doing the adaptation, the other kid doing the performance, I think she'd be pretty happy.
I love that. And I feel like with Hamlet, like you're saying that feels very at home. There is so much like madness and perplexity, kind of how you're saying with your career was in this very eclectic way. I think Hamlet is a very eclectic character where he, has his through line, but the way that he gets there is not the way that the river runs. It's the way that everything kind of moves around it. He's responding a lot to his environment to try and make sure that his plan is coming to fruition. It feels similar in a way where, you're talking about your history of how you were coming up as a performer and as a comedian, responding to all of these pushbacks that you were getting and finding your own sort of footholds like that.
Yeah, there are certain things of Hamlet, and you've got to consider it, like it's a real story. I'm afraid the Hamlet, this is all about his son, doesn't actually match the history of it. The Amleth story, the legend of Amleth, the prince from Jutland, whose father was killed by his uncle, as Saxo Grammaticus wrote it down. This play already existed. They do feel that it's been lost in time, and this is a rewriting of the original Hamlet. So let's go with that rather than it's all about Shakespeare and his wife. But I do think that Hamlet could be based on Shakespeare's own character, overthinking things. Now, I know this problem. The perfectionists are the people who overthink. And they say, let's not, I can't, let's go back to that and change that. Let's go back to that and change it. Maybe a painter constantly changing things, maybe somebody reworking something they've written or performed. But I don't do that. I do hyperanalyze, though. I do instinctive on one hand and analytical. So I feel there's an intelligence in Hamlet that I re-identify with. But he will not get to the point of doing the thing that his dad said, revenge me. End of act one, what's that? 20, let's say that's about 30 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes in, and you've got another 2 hours or 5 hours, 4 hours if you're doing the exceedingly long version, which I don't think ever they performed. So you just say the rest of the time he's saying, why aren't I doing anything? Why aren't I killing anyone? Doing that technique you can do where the audience is going, is this going to happen ever? Laertes would have killed him within 20 minutes. Laertes is hot blooded when he got with it. Whereas Hamlet's going, I'll do mad, I'll go mad. That's good. And I think from story technique, Shakespeare's going, mad always works. Let's get some mad in there. And then what else can I do? I'll get the character saying, why am I not doing anything? What am I? Am I a coward? Rogan Peasant Slave. See versus end of act two. He's got to do this delaying thing to make it into this epic, and it did become an epic. And it is an unusual play. There are the things you think, why is it going in that direction? Why is it going in this direction? And maybe he was adding, maybe Shakespeare was saying, who's done this quarter? Oh, I didn't ask that to be printed. Okay, well, let's add these bits in. And that is that how do we do it in that way, or do we write it and change it? Think about all the things that they did that he wrote out, and he was writing, there's the bits, go and do it. Burbage, go and do that. Kemp, go and do that. And Kemp was going off and doing his own thing, we know. And Burbage must have been there, and the other actors saying, actually, this line, you change that to this, that makes sense. And the printers, even the printers saying, oh, I can't fit that in, I'm going to change the wordings of this. I don't have a U, I've got an upside down N, all this kind of stuff. If you go through the folios, they're all slightly different, each one. So you can't trust things. And you, in the end, I said to Selina Cadell, let's serve the play, let's make the play the best it can be. So the story of the tragedy of Hamlet is served well. He did go to England in the Saxo Grammaticus legend story that he wrote down. He did go to England. There he married and fought a battle, which doesn't happen. And in
Isn't
Shakespeare's story, he goes off to England and he has a pirate fight, not shown on the
yeah
stage. Why would you not show a pirate fight? Good
right
God, man. It's
had to
insane.
leave it to Tom Stoppard to come and fill in his blanks.
Exactly. That is a weird thing. It's show not tell. And he's doing tell not show. There's letters. Here's another letter. Here's another. That's the old trope of a phone call. Why is he doing that? This is Shakespeare. So you've got to, if you put him under everything he did was genius, he got up and he had a genius breakfast. He did a genius thing. Then he wrote some genius things. Then he went for a poo and that was a genius poo. That's not the way to go about it. Just judge everything how you see it and say, that's a beautiful bit of poetry. If words be made of breath and breath of life, I have no life to breathe what thou hast said to me. That is a lovely piece of poetry. And I'm someone who's intimidated by poetry, by words, by literature. So and my brother was not a Selina was a big fan, my director, big fan of Shakespeare. My brother was wary of Shakespeare, and I was someone who'd been intimidated by Shakespeare. So I think it was a good mix, but I want to make it live and visceral. This word is what we do. I am sure that Shakespeare and Kidd and Jonson and Marlowe, they wrote their plays, and any writer write their plays so that it's people have a visceral reaction. They go, oh my God, oh yes, oh, I love this character. Oh, I hate that. That's so
Yes.
funny. You don't want an audience sitting there going, what is that? What does that mean? That's
I fully
okay.
agree, and I feel that when you're an audience and you're watching Shakespeare, it's so foundational and it's existed for so long because it is visceral and because it can like reach into anybody's soul because it's all in there. It's all in there and it can all be reached by the audience if it is felt and if it is put
But
in front of them.
I would say that some of it is opaque, and as my brother said, obtuse. And you go, I don't know what you're trying to say there. And we found there was one piece that was in it where in a line that goes, and there's a whole paragraph, and you go, I'm not sure what you're trying to say there. And you change one word from just is to whereas, and you go, oh, this all makes sense now. And you think, is that what they were really trying to say? Because you want your audience going, yeah, that's so true. Oh, great observation. Oh, I feel like that. You don't want them going, you did what with your what's that now? What does that mean? Anyone got a dictionary? You don't want that. It's whether you use bodkin, a bare bodkin or a mere dagger. My brother changed it to mere dagger. Dagger is used. Dagger is an old word. But a bare bodkin, a lot of people go, bodkin? What the fuck's a bodkin? Now, they were 10 a penny in those days. They are needles, huge needles about this big, with a huge eye there. And then they're used for punching into sails so that you can put your cord through it and you can repair your sails and put up new sails and this kind of stuff. And the Thames was a super highway. All those theatres were around the Thames, and everyone, and bodkins would be like shivs, like people use in prison. They get a toothbrush, they carve it down, they use it as a weapon of aggression. And that's what a bodkin would have been. Oh, it's my bodkin. What you got with that? It's my bod. I use it for that. And then you do some damage with it. So that's what a bare bodkin was. But if you don't know what it is, everyone goes, what?
What are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about? So we changed it to a mere dagger. Some people could disagree with that. And I say no, because I want the visceral reaction. I am sure that Shakespeare wanted people to go, yes,
Yes,
no,
and to be
ah.
understood is to be
Yeah.
felt. And so if you're not gonna feel it if you don't understand it.
Yeah. And the idea is you let it wash over you and you don't get half of it. That is not what good writing is about. And I feel that
No.
strongly.
I really love that. I really feel that as you're saying it. I could keep talking to you all day, but we have shot past our allotted time.
Yes,
And
unfortunately.
I must let you go.
Okay.
But it
Well, good to
has
talk to you.
it's been so incredible to talk to you. Such an honor. Just from me, you've been such an inspiration throughout my life.
Well, you got a very good flag there on the,
Well,
yes,
thank
on
you
the back
very
of one.
much. Thank you
I
very
did.
much. You've got a
And
very
do
good haircut.
you, yes, I know. I've got my ponytail there, which should be slightly higher. You've
Yeah,
got
you
your
and me
two.
both. Yeah.
There we go. We got the same haircut.
Yeah,
There we
there we
go.
go.
So yes, when I came out over 40 years this January, because I came out in January of 85. And some people say, "Oh, you came out 2 years ago when you said Susie." I said, "No, I've just added my an extra name in. Thank you very
Yeah.
much. I came
Yeah.
out 40 years ago when we didn't
Yeah.
even have doors. There weren't aeroplanes. There weren't even electric hair dryers."
You gave me language when I had none, and that's been invaluable.
Well, thank you, because that is one of the things. My dad said this to me: "You can talk." And I said, "What?" He said, "Where
Yes.
you can talk." And I said, "What? You, well," and he obviously meant I can articulate. The articulation is the key thing. And going into politics, I will be an MP eventually. I'll just keep
Yes,
pushing
you
till I get
will.
it. And trying to articulate things in a way that people can grab hold of and say, "Okay, well, that sounds fair. You know, this is my life, and I'm doing it. I'm trying to be positive. It's a truthful thing that I'm saying. This is something inside me. I didn't get up on a Tuesday and say, 'Oh, I'd like to be trans on this Tuesday,' and keep that. I was that, and I knew when I was five, and I thought I'd tell everyone.
Yeah.
Surely that's better than lying for your entire life, like a certain orange person does."
Oh,
So
true.
anyway, thank you
Yes.
very much. Great to talk to you. Good, and all power to
Thank
you.
you. Yes, and to you, and best of luck with your shows, and I can't wait to
Yeah.
see you in Auckland soon.
Thank you very much.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.